Angela Hornsby, and I'm speaking with Mr. Bavard Brown at his office at First Baptist Church in Durham, North Carolina. The date is February 17, 1999, and we're here as part of the Southern Oral History Program's New Immigrants Project. Okay, Mr. Brown, my first question is, if you could just please state your full name.
Herbert Brevard Brown.
Could you tell me when and where were you born?
I was born in Asheville, North Carolina, June 28, 1929.
Were you named after someone in your family?
My father's name is Herbert, the same as my first name, and Brevard, my middle name, is taken from my mother's family name.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could tell me a little about your family history, your grandparents, who were they, where did they live, what did they do?
Okay, my grandparents on my mother's side and my father's side both were from Asheville, North Carolina. I guess some difference between these two families. The grandparents on my mother's side were, I would say, middle class Americans, and especially my grandmother was very productive and I guess somewhat maybe business-oriented. My grandfather on that side worked, but maybe not at quite the same level in some ways as my grandmother. On my father's side, my grandparents were country people, low income, living in the country. I remember my grandmother ran a country store for some years that I remember being in when I was a child. So they lived generally comfortable, but on a very low level economically and maybe in some ways socially. They were all Christians.
Very important. You mentioned on your mother's side, your grandmother being very productive.
Mm-hmm.
What did she do specifically?
I will have to guess at a little of this. I know they lived in a big, big home. I can remember the big porch running about halfway around the house. And I'm not sure what she did with all those rooms. We stayed there sometimes, but I'm guessing she might have had something like a bed and breakfast. What is today a bed and breakfast business, or at least a little business? I'm not sure how she would have accumulated the money. It wouldn't take a rich person to have the home she had, but anyway, I very well remember that home, and I've been in it within the last 10 years or so. I'm not sure what she did to generate money. It was not a big thing at all, but I would say she was, you know, she was the one sort of making sure that you know, the bills were paid.
And what time are we talking about in terms of your grandparents?
My mother was born in 1898, so her parents would have been, you know, maybe along the first half of the 19th century on into the, you know, first part of the 20th century when they lived. And both of them lived to old ages. I think my grandfather, actually, he was step-grandfather, into his 90s. That's on my mother's side.
Tell me, did you know your grandparents fairly well? You mentioned visiting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I knew my parents, you know, were very faithful in taking us for visits. I remember one time my grandmother, when I was a teenager, my grandmother came to live with us, or not live permanently, but to be with us, I guess, as children for a period of time. I guess one of our favorite points of visit when we were children and growing up, we would go to Asheville, North Carolina, and most likely would stay in the home of my grandparents on my mother's side. They had that big house.
And sort of now talk a little bit about your parents. Okay. Who were they and what did they do?
Okay, my parents I consider very important in my approach to life, and the most important thing, the very most important thing, which I remember, I was probably about 8 or 9 years old, and my mother being a Christian, of course, my father also a Christian, my mother explained to me one day, one night, I guess it was, many, many years ago, how to be a Christian. I had a concern, and I wanted to know, so I called her to my bed, and I asked her about being a Christian, and I feel like I accepted Christ there with her that day, and that's a good memory. But my mother was certainly a real mother. You know, fortunately, she did not have to work out of the home much during her life. So she was a homemaker and, you know, cared for the four of us, the children, very, very well. And we learned respect, to obey, maybe a little bit too much sometimes. You know, today people, and I think rightly so many times, raise a good question with their parents, you know, ask why. We didn't do much of that. Maybe it was the tradition of that day. But I respect that. I respect that. Maybe sometimes children today need to have a little more respect. But anyway, we might have been a little off on that, that we did not think for ourselves too much sometimes. My father was a minister, a Baptist minister, and I'm grateful for this. I think this brought a few problems and questions that we might not have understood at that time. I can look back now, though, with great respect and thankfulness that I had this kind of background. And they both gave freedom to us. On the other hand, we just rather naturally knew that we were to obey them. And so we loved our parents. My mother is still living. She's 100 years old. Next month, she'll be 101 years old. If she lives one more year to 2000, she will have lived in 3 centuries. How about that? And so this is a wonderful thing to think about. Maybe I'll make it half that way. But a good home background.
You mentioned some problems and questions that you had. Could you elaborate on that?
I gave you sort of a humorous one, but one that to me was very serious. Thank you. One rather humorous, but very serious to me, the fact that my parents did not want me to play football. I was very, I guess, a little above average athletically and enjoyed sports, most anything I could play, but I think this was a rather ridiculous and a hurting experience when they didn't say much about it, but I just knew they did not want me to play football simply because I might get hurt. Well, you know, we can get hurt in a lot of things, and this took a lot away from my we'll say confidence, or not so much confidence because I played other sports, which they supported very much. But I think maybe the reason there was somewhat my body that might get broken in football. But my parents had us take music lessons. My mother was very musical, did some teaching herself. I can remember her teaching me, but she wanted each of us to take music, piano lessons. And maybe she was afraid I'd break a finger and couldn't play the piano, but I think this was a hurting experience.
How old were you?
Well, this would be, you know, like junior high school and high school. Yeah, junior high school and high school. I would have enjoyed playing. Played on a sport, did pretty well. But, you know, their perspective was concern and care, but I think they really went too far. I'm sure they did on that.
Were your parents still living in Asheville?
Or? Well, my father being a minister, you can imagine ministers are called to different churches. We actually lived in, first in South Carolina. I do not remember that experience, but my first memories are in Greenville, South Carolina, where he was pastor of a Baptist church there. And then we also lived in Virginia in my early teens. And I guess back in North Carolina in one area or another for different reasons, you know, until I was off to college and married.
Do you remember what part of Virginia was it?
Yeah, Arlington, right outside of Washington, D.C., a little village called Cherrydale. Mm-hmm. Went to school there in fifth and sixth grades. No, let's see. Fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth, and I think about half of the ninth grade. Arlington, Virginia. Pretty well-known, big residential area.
Your father being a minister, how did he come upon that profession? Was it something that had been, had other relatives gone into the same type of work?
I don't think so much other relatives because, as I say, his parents were rather poor. Of course, this did not relate being called or going into the ministry, but basically, probably, there was not a lot of motivation or encouragement into that work from especially his father. You know, I'm sure his father would say, I'm proud of you, Herbert, but there was not a lot of that. There was not a lot of that. I guess my father would have had some regrets because of the lack of encouragement from his own father. Now, his mother would have been the opposite, but she didn't have anything, any money much to help. So I think basically my father worked his way through college and I guess in a similar way through divinity school. And now his church, his home church, which probably is still a rather active church in Asheville, North Carolina, was great encouragement. I think my father would say that through the influence and encouragement, I think of a particular woman, we'll say, in that church, God encouraged him, and as a maybe 17-year-old, he would say, and I think this can be true, this was true in his case, that he felt God's speaking to him. We use the word calling him into the gospel ministry. So this would have happened in his teens, and then, of course, he went on to college, pretty much working his way, and then on into divinity school, seminary.
And their social, your parents' socioeconomic status was what?
Well, it was, the status was typical of preachers, pastors, which more so in that day, like in the 20s and 30s on up, some additional years, was rather low compared to today. I think pastors more and more, maybe almost totally, are paid, related to their training and the expense of their training and so forth, a fair salary. Then I would not say it was unfair, but it was sort of like, preacher, you do the preaching and we'll take care of the pay, something like that, which was sort of a way to say, we'll decide what you're worth. I don't think there was a great disrespect, but I think there was not a proper evaluation of what, in some cases, and probably with my father in several cases, a salary that was really not appropriate. Mm-hmm. So they would have been, we always had enough. I never felt like I was hungry, but, we didn't have any extras. And so maybe a little below, middle economic status.
Did you always live in homes?
Mm-hmm. Until I went off to school.
Did you have your own room?
Yeah, I had three sisters, so I always had my own room. I think when we were real little, we probably all slept in the same room, but, when we were a little older, I had a room.
And I know in some ways you touched upon this in terms of sort of the questions that you had about some things.
Mm-hmm.
just trying to get a, again, a general sense of what was it like growing up in the home with the, your father being a minister.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of really influence did religious life have on you as a...
Yeah, I'm grateful for the religious background. Consistent, I guess, with a few of these things that were, I think, now a little too extreme in their requirements of me and maybe my sister. You know, I know they were sincere, and I respected them. I, at that time, didn't question anything. But that was not necessarily the right perspective for me. Of course, I was young, but I probably should have questioned a little bit more. And I guess my sons, you know, as they were growing up, they, you know, they would not hesitate to raise a question, this type thing. So maybe it's part of the age, part of, you know, history where we live. But I think they went a little too far on some of these things, but I still respected and loved them. And so growing up in a home like this is generally a big plus, because you learn the standards, the moral standards and Christian principles, you know, from day one. But probably to some degree, our parents were typical, especially in the Baptist denomination. Other ministers, I'm sure, are rather strict. And so things have changed. Approaches, perspectives have changed over the years. Not that Baptists have generally become... people who didn't respect their parents, who don't obey their, no, not that at all. I think there's a little more freedom, mm-hmm. a little more freedom. Of course, we were not bound. We had freedom, but, you know, maybe a little more encouragement to disagree when it's appropriate.
As part of your father's ministry, did he minister to other ethnic groups, or was it primarily
yep.
during that time?
White, of course, that was during the years when, I guess, there was segregation, unfortunately. I'm so proud to say that this church is open to any races. We have international students from Duke University coming here. Of course, being right at the Northeast Central Durham area and population, Hispanics and a fair number of African Americans come here. Several are members, one or two middle class or upper class blacks come here, and I'm glad to see this, very glad to see this. And so this church is open, and you know, some of the people here are supportive of our lay ministries out into the neighborhood right around us. And so to me, this is very great. So this church is gradually integrating. It will always be predominantly white. Probably will always have a white pastor, but the blacks, the Hispanics, any would respect that. And but during my father's ministries, you know, during segregation days, unfortunately, and the question was not even raised, I guess. I mean, but I'm so glad I can think back when I was a child, like under 10 years old, we had a black lady in Greenville, South Carolina, who came and helped my mother. And I think we have grown up with a respect for all races. And I'm so glad. I'm so glad. I don't have to, in any big way at least, you know, fight any temptation to racism, anything like that. I'm so glad.
By help, you mean
Yeah, she helped my mom, right. She came in, you know, to probably help cook a little, clean up the house, this sort of thing. And, you know, so I would say in the young years, you know, having this lady there helped me form some good positive attitudes and perspectives toward African Americans. And but it's still in the, of course, I didn't realize we were in segregation at that point. Now I look back and I know. But, yeah, that helped form my feelings and respect for everybody.
What was it specifically about her? Can you remember any particular things that struck you?
Well,
at that age?
I can remember sort of a unfortunate thing that I could tell you, but I really don't remember exactly what she did, but I'm sure she helped my mom clean the house, probably did some cooking, and, you know, that type thing. But I think this lady had some problems also. I can remember a very unfortunate incident, if you would want me to relate it. I can remember, I think this happened, that probably one of my parents, seemed like this lady, I was under 10 here, seemed like this lady would wear a, maybe we'll say a white, or maybe it was a coat or whatever. Anyway, something you take off when you come in, go to work, and hang up on the something. And one day they found a gun in her pocket. So, you know, you just think, wow, somebody's trying to get her or hurt her, or she's got to defend herself. So I don't know. Nothing ever happened that I recall. But, you know, maybe that was a result of some kind of I don't know what it was. I don't know what, but I presume she had to feel like that I'm going to protect myself.
Okay, so.
But I'm sure she was a good, you know, good person.
Mm-hmm. So early on, again, your father traveled around a lot, and you went to schools
mm-hmm.
where he was.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you, do you remember when you first came to North Carolina?
Mm-hmm. We moved. I was born in North Carolina. My uncle was a doctor, so my mother came to Asheville, North Carolina for me to be born. But we did not live in North Carolina until about 1944. We moved to a little town in Bryson City, North Carolina, out in western North Carolina, where I met my wife when we were 14 years old. She was in the church there that my father pastored. And so a good place to meet your wife. And that was 1944 when we came from Virginia, Arlington. You know, he changed churches and came down to Bryson City, North Carolina. So we were there several years. And, of course, we've lived really more years of our life in North Carolina than any other place. But we've been right here about 31 years.
So, what, had you completed college when you moved to Bryson?
When I moved to Bryson, I was 14 years old. So there would have been several years. I went to college. My first year in college, I was would have been 1947.
Mm-hmm.
1947. Finished college in 1951. And all my that college experience was in North Carolina.
And what college did you attend?
Okay, I went to Mars Hill Junior College, which is near Asheville.
Mm-hmm.
It was a junior college then. Now it's a senior college. And then I finished my degree at Catawba College, which is a four-year college in Salisbury, North Carolina.
And what did you study?
Business administration.
Okay, and just to backtrack just a little bit, when you were younger, obviously, you
were involved in the church. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of
tell me what your church involvement was, and also any type of community activities that you were involved in?
Okay. I think I would have been considered, you know, an active youth, though in those days, there were not as many activities within the church, I would say, for youth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, probably my mother would have helped some, you know, the pastor's wife. None of these churches were big churches, therefore there would be limited finances, but I would say I would be considered active, and, you know, in things like, I remember from our church, a time or two we went to a big conference center, Baptist Conference Center, Ridgecrest, close to Asheville. You know, I guess my father would sign up kids to who wanted to go, and he'd get us over there somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember that as an activity. But my father would encourage activities for teens. I remember before I was a teen, you know, he would even round up a bunch of guys, take them, you know, to play in a baseball league or something like this. But there were not as many activities for children and teens in those days, though, you know, we were, I would say, active. like we would participate. Like I probably was pretty good in Bible drills, you know, just knowing where books of the Bible, books in the Bible are, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and verses in the Bible. You know, I could find them quickly because of my upbringing and training in the church. I was baptized before I was 10 in the church in Greenville, South Carolina. And my father baptized me. So this is some of my experience in the church. Now, what was the other question? I think there was a second part. That was my church activity.
Any community activity?
Oh, community. Okay, thank you. I worked a little, like delivering papers. I think I was willing to work. I remember back when you had the old push lawnmowers rather than the power lawnmowers of today in a big, big yard near where I live. This was before I was, when I was like 10 to 14, somewhere along in there. And, you know, I would, for a little money, I would go out and mow a lawn. And, but that's not really community activities. Now I can say I'm into activity, not so much, you know, general community, but I can say, you know, we do some things for social improvement as well as Christian ministry in our ministries here and there. But, you know, I was into sports a lot, but that's not community activities. That's not community betterment, but...
That's from the Astro
Curriculum. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you played what type of sports?
I played basketball and baseball and tennis.
So after getting your degree in business administration, what did you do?
Okay. One of the first main jobs for 2 or 3 years was driving a dairy truck. That didn't take any education to do that, but this is what I did back in my mid to later 20s till I was 30 years old. Then I would say my career really began, and this would relate to my business administration training. I began work on the staff of Goodwill Industries in Winston-Salem. This is a program of training and employment for handicapped people, people physically handicapped and mentally, maybe emotionally handicapped. And so I was on the staff there beginning at age 30 in Winston-Salem. The Goodwill Industries had been there many years in a very small, old facility, but in 1960, about the time I went to work there, it moved into a brand new facility. This facility is still there. I noticed the other day that they have improved it now that it's getting a little old, having been built about 1960. And they have a tremendous program. Now, this has developed over the years. And then I went to Atlanta for just a short time, about a year and a half on the staff there. And then I was invited here to Durham, North Carolina, to begin as executive director of the Goodwill Industries here. Goodwill Industries Research, That was about 1966 here in Durham. Mm-hmm. I got married about 1953.
Okay. How did that relationship develop from first meeting her at age 14?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. We met in the church, in the choir room. That's the first time I remember seeing Doris. I'd heard about her because I guess I knew who I was looking for or something. And then our relationship was never bad, but, you know, as far as being sweethearts or good friends, there was a period of about 10 years. She was off to college first and I'm sure went with other guys. I somewhat like that. Sometimes during that 10-year period, we would write to each other. Sometimes we wouldn't. Always a friendship, though, and So we would see each other. Her family and my family were good friends, and well, she was a Christian. This meant a lot to me. You know, people who had good standards and this sort of thing. I can remember, though I couldn't have been, I was serious, I guess. I can remember when I was in my third or fourth year in college talking with somebody and saying, well, I could marry her, you know. But I, you know, I probably didn't really know that I would. So, you know, a few years rocked along, and we ended up in the same town. She was working in Greenville, South Carolina, and we just sort of were drawn to each other again and for good. So we were married back in the old church. We had the last wedding in the old Baptist church in Bryson City, North Carolina. Then the church was, building was torn down. They built a new church. That was in 1953 when we were married, and so I presume soon after that the building was torn down, and it was very, very old, and but I think we were the last wedding.
Where did you settle after being
married? Yeah, I went to and took some additional training in school. So we were in Fort Worth, Texas a couple of years. Then we came back to Winston-Salem. That was the next basic move, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Where I went to work, and all of our sons were born there in the Baptist, our three sons in Baptist Hospital. And so about, let's see, about 10 years of our life, good years of our lives were lived in Winston-Salem. Then we went to Atlanta for that year and a half and then to Durham.
Okay. Do you have grandchildren?
Yes, I have four grandchildren. One here in Durham, and then my youngest son, who has three children, live in Colorado Springs.
And where are your son? Where do your children live now?
Okay, two here. They're all in computer work. my oldest son is an outstanding computer programmer, and wrote the first version of the software system that is sold and distributed by, you might say, my middle son, who is president of a software company at Research Park, BillNet, and they have about 80 employees, all computer-related. Their whole, actually, my middle son who runs his company is an architect, so they started out building houses, custom houses, and did this for some years, and then veered off in, well, my son wanted a computer software system specifically designed for builders, you know, builders. I mean, this can help a builder manage his business, which is right complicated. And so he veered off into just software, and that's totally what they do today, software development, and they have a proportionally a good share of the market out there, that is builders who need a system to help them run their business. So they're moving along, should go public within a couple of years. Very ambitious, risk-oriented entrepreneur type. And Keith, as I say, my oldest son, a programmer, works with him. And so it's very exciting to see this happen, you know, and try to know something about it. My youngest son, so that's my two older sons in the same business. My younger son, we feel like God so definitely led him. We regret a little bit that he moved so far away, but several years ago went to Colorado Springs, not knowing anybody. Took a job in a software company. They all are into computers, in a software company there in Colorado Springs, as his position was something like, I don't exactly know what the main part of his business, I mean, his job was, but anyway, he went to UNC Law School and so was a lawyer, and was able to utilize some of this training and experience as legal counsel with his software company. And I think that moved him on up. Anyway, I guess it was rather providential that within a couple years, the president then left and Vance was moved into the presidency of the company. Sort of a, you know, fairly, you know, fair-sized company there, which we have visited. We're proud of him for what he's done, especially sort of going going where he was unknown and within several years being president of a software company. And, of course, they have three children, two sons and a daughter. They have our only granddaughter.
I think you partially answered this, but I want to get an idea of when and under what circumstances you came to Durham.
Okay. From Atlanta. I was recommended to come here by my former boss in the Goodwill Industries in Winston-Salem, which I'll always be appreciative of that. You know, some people have some influence, and I'd worked for him, so he knew something about me, and I was wanting to get into directorship of a Goodwill. So anyway, ended up here to work with a board of directors and begin the Goodwill Industries operation here in Durham, 1966. Left there after, I think, 13 years and went to work with a man who was on the board of Goodwill Industries, and I'm appreciative of his giving me a job when I left Goodwill. That was Newton Instrument, which is now located in Butner, North Carolina.
When you're in Durham, were you do you recall any incidents regarding civil rights?
In Durham,
what's going on at the time?
Not specifically. I was reading something the other day, maybe related to Black History Month or something like this. Maybe identifying or recalling the beginning of civil rights movement in Durham, probably in the 60s, maybe beginning in the early 60s. I really don't know the exact facts on that, but I do not, you know, as I look back, I remember something of the changing environment, like downtown Durham, you know, streets were changed, businesses moved out. I cannot remember. There may have been. I cannot remember specifically incidents, you know, any problems or conflicts. Maybe there were some. I would guess there were some. Of course, we have the North Carolina Central University here, predominantly Black, though integrated now. I'm not sure what it was then. And as to whether there were ever any conflict, I can't remember specifically, but I'm sure we had something noticed or physical, you might say, something you could see probably in the area of conflict or at least disagreements. I know students at Duke University, I guess African-Americans some years ago did some kind of sit-in, this type thing. So, you know, we're not, unfortunately, free of possibly some wrongs. Maybe wrongs, there were wrongs on both sides, but I guess most everybody, unfortunately, experienced something of the racial conflict. I think, I'm glad to say that I've had very little problem in my own mind. You know, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. And maybe it was because of that Black lady, a little bit anyway, and the upbringing that we had to respect people. And now we have a ministry, one of our ministries out of here is to international students at Duke from all over the world. So many nationalities, many of the students we know, and some of them almost like our own children. So this is a wonderful experience we have. once in a while. Not many come from Africa, but we have a very close friend, the first student, this is at Duke, the first student ever at Duke University, I think he's like about 39 or 40 years old, so that's above the age of the average student, mid-20s, whatever, over there. But I think it's so commendable that he's over here, I think sponsored by the World Bank. His name is Eugene. He's from Rwanda. Poor country, country that's had, you know, genocide, that type thing, just I've heard him talk about. So I respect this so much, the troubles that he personally, whom I know, has been through because of conflict between classes of people, we'll say. I'm not sure what they call them, but the Tutsis and the Hutu or whatever in Rwanda, you know, whoever's in command sort of slaughter some of the others. And this is so bad. And anyway, interesting experiences.
So I guess also I take it that you weren't necessarily involved in any of the protests that African-Americans organized or anything like that.
No, our Goodwill Industries was certainly, you know, equal employment. I don't have any bad feelings of any mistreatment that I know of. I'm not saying there wasn't. I remember, this is an interesting thing, I remember one of our board members, this was in the beginning day, let's say long, I'm sure it was in 1966, beginning year, and in the building that we were utilizing, there was still a sign up on the wall. I can remember this. And this man, a sign saying something like, for colored or for something like that, you know, the segregation implication or the segregation situation of that time, you know, segregating bathrooms and drinking fountains and all of this. He just tore it off the wall. I was glad. He just tore it off the wall. You know, I mean, we didn't even question things like that. I mean, we knew that was wrong.
And where was this? Was this in?
Mm-hmm, Durham. When I came here in the facility that we moved into to start the first Goodwill Industries. Okay. That was still on the wall from the last business who was in it.